being sexually attractive seems in the culture somewhat antithetical to being intelligent. So there's this polarization of either you're smart, serious, or you're hot and sexy. So we thought, you know, kids might in their own mind think, if I'm going to be hot and sexy, I'm not going to be really a serious student.
Hello, and welcome to Into the Fold. This is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health at the University of Texas at Austin. Hogg Foundation is a grant-making foundation, and Into the Fold is our by now 11 months old attempt at trying to broaden the conversation around mental health issues. Speaking of which, if you happen to listen to the April episode of Into the Fold, we had a pretty illuminating discussion with a member of the Hogg Foundation National Advisory Council, Dr. Kevin Coakley, on the subject of stereotype threat. And for those who don't know, stereotype threat is largely about the various ways that an individual's perceptions of how they are perceived can impact, among other things, academic performance. And so that segues quite nicely into today's episode, which delves into the subject of internalized sexualization, in particular for adolescent girls, and how that can impact, at least according to one study, their academic performance, or even the zeal with which they take on, you know, academic and professional challenges. And so with me today is Rebecca Bigler, professor of psychology, right here at the University of Texas at Austin, who's going to be, you know, talking about this study, and maybe help me to kind of tease out some of its larger implications. So Dr. Bigler, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so first, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about, your own background, and let's just say, a capsule version of your own growth and evolution as a psychologist and as a researcher, and how it is that you came to be interested in this particular topic.
Yeah, I have studied gender role development for just about 30 years now. And I have been interested in those years in how media images and conceptions of ideal feminine versus masculine behavior shape children's attitudes and their preferences, their occupational goals, their traits, etc. And over the last 30 years, gender roles have changed, and I think especially in the last 10 or so years, I really started to notice a change in the ideal feminine role, the traits, attributes that went along with being the ideal female in U.S. culture. And part of this was from raising my own kids, so having one foot in being a mother and watching three kids, two girls, negotiate gender roles in popular culture and peer culture. And in particular, it seemed to me that the role of the female has gotten more sexualized. So if you think of the stereotype in the 50s, women were ideally very domestic, servile, modest. You think of the female 50s housewife, for example. And many things have changed in the intervening decades. Women have certainly developed more of a role in the world of work. But at the same time, especially in popular culture, they have gotten to be much more sexualized. It seems much more important to be what the kids call hot as a woman. And their dress, their poses, what they value focuses more and more on being sexually alluring to males. And I really wanted to know whether that was true, whether it was just seemed like that to me, or whether kids were starting to perceive the female role differently, and whether it was shaping their own attitudes and preferences.
Okay. So define for us internalized sexualization. I mean, it, at the very least, I'm sure that it means more than just a concern with one's appearance.
Yes. So there. So let me start and define the term for you. The word sexualization usually means having attractiveness become conflated with or means sexual attractiveness. So there's always been an emphasis on looking presentable, pretty, nice, attractive. But what's happened in the culture is it's become increasingly sexualized. So you're drawing more attention to your sexual attributes, trying to be sexually luring. So we've noticed clothing has changed to become tighter, more skin revealing, more cleavage, higher heels. That kind of an emphasis. Sexualization also happens when your worth is measured by your sexual appeal, or when your sexuality is imposed on you by others. So for example, we are often studying pre-adolescent girls, girls who are, you know, 9, 10, 11 year olds, and valuing them for their sexual attributes then seems inappropriate because of their age. So sexualization refers to those things, seeing people as valuable for their sexual allure and imposing that on them. Internalization means really to us that girls have taken that on. They've come to personally believe that's what's important about them. So a girl who endorses the belief, what's important about me is that I'm sexually attractive to men or boys. My favorite example of internalization is kids is we've done a data collection that's not published where we ask girls whether they shave their legs and why. So we're asking girls 10 to 13 if they shave their legs. They all do. It's virtually all girls who shave their legs. And we asked them why. We said, do you shave your legs because your mother thinks your legs look better that way? Do you shave your legs for your girlfriends because your girlfriends think, oh, you should shave your legs? Do you do it for a boyfriend? Do you have a boyfriend who thinks that's important? Or do you do it for yourself? 85% of the girls said they did it for themselves. So that's what we refer to internalization. They perceive the pressure to shave their legs to be entirely internal. And they say things like, I just hate my legs with hair on them. I don't like it. I shave my legs even when I know no one's going to see them. That's why I know it's not for my boyfriend or it's not for my parents. But of course, we know that's ridiculous. No child is born hating their own hair on their legs. All humans have hair on their legs. So what they have done is look at the model in the culture that girls should be hairless, and they've internalized it to say, now I don't like myself. So I'm not doing it to please other people. I'm doing it for me. And so we think internalized sexualization is this self-driven, I want to be sexually appealing to boys for me. It's not because I'm being rewarded for it. It's not because I've been shaped by my culture. It's because this is what's personally important to me.
Okay. So so what you just said, it's occurring against a backdrop of, you know, what's come to be known as third wave feminism, where, I mean, among its other defining characteristics, where it isn't so uncommon anymore, you know, to come across the argument that overt sexiness need not be at odds with self-confidence, personal agency, etc.
Absolutely.
And so one question that I have is, you know, how is, you know, your own research either, you know, either staking a claim in that debate or moving it forward?
Yeah. So you're absolutely right that sexualization is a big part of even some feminist ideology and images. The idea that sex can be power. Full and women should get power out of their sexual allure. So stripping, you know, if you can make money doing it, more power to you, etc. The name that comes up a lot when I talk to young people about this is Beyonce, who very much identifies as a feminist, is really looked up to, was wildly popular. And yet in a video crawls around in a thong with her butt in the air, clearly for a video camera angle that is for men. And it's really sold to girls as, this is powerful. I'm doing it for me, and I'm doing it for the power and prestige and money that I get out of doing this. And so, yeah, my question was really, do girls see that and internalize it? So do you have 12 and 13-year-old girls saying, yes, this is a great source of power for me. If I can take on this sexualness, can I get power out of it? And my argument, you know, really was, let's see whether this is happening. And I guess we do know from our research on gender that girls are very lacking in power in their interactions with boys. Girls have very little ability to affect boys' behavior all the way through elementary school. So we know from observational studies that when boys are talking to girls, boys just don't listen and don't do what girls say. Boys influence each other more often physically through dominance hierarchies. So they really dominate girls. And then girls hit puberty, and they do, it appears to us, seem to have some power over boys. So we know there are middle school instances, for example, where girls are making money showing their breasts to boys in the halls of a middle school. And you're right that one argument might be, that's wonderful. That's a source of power. Wear your, you know, skin-revealing, cleavage-revealing outfit to middle school, and you can get power out of it. Money, power over boys. The other argument is that there might be some downsides to that, that as a source of power, that there might be some real limitations to that kind of power, and it might have some downsides. So that's where we absolutely jumped in to study it.
Okay, yeah. My teeth hurt just now saying third wave. I think I may have tipped off my own age here. for all we know, the third wave ended like 8 years ago, so... feel free to check me on that, but I couldn't come up with something better on the spot.
No,
so,
it's entirely true that feminist movement has been actually very conflicted about the role of sex for 60 years, stemming from the pornography wars in the 1970s, which really damaged the feminist movement because of the split between the groups that were critical, anti-porn, and the feminists who saw sex as empowering and pornography as pro-sex.
Right. So without getting any further in over my head here, about this study, I think it was published recently in the Journal of Research on Adolescence. Just tell us about the study design, its major findings, and the conclusions that you drew from it.
Super. I sure will. So we started testing a hypothesis about whether internalized sexualization was related to grades.
Yeah.
And we thought, partly because being sexually attractive seems in the culture somewhat antithetical to being intelligent. So there's this polarization of either you're smart, serious, or you're hot and sexy. So we thought, you know, kids might in their own mind think, if I'm going to be hot and sexy, I'm not going to be really a serious student. But we didn't know if those two things really were opposite or could possibly go together. And some people argued, oh, no, you can be super smart and super hot at the same time. So the first thing we did was set out to get a big group of middle school girls and measure their grades in school and their standardized test scores on the Texas State exam, the TOC score at the time. And then we measured internalized sexualization. And we measure this with a survey that looks at their attitudes in six domains. One, for example, is media, and we ask how much they would like to view different kinds of media, some of which is sexualized and some of which is not. So how much would you want to read a magazine article called How to Get Boys to Like You versus read a magazine article called How to Recycle in Your Community. So some of the magazine and TV shows have this focus on appearance and being hot and being sexy and doing makeup and getting boys to like you, or neutral kinds of things like recycling or the environment or science. And then we ask about their peers and how much their peers talk and socialize around the issues of getting boyfriends and appearance and looking hot. And there's a clothing subscale, which is my favorite subscale, and kids go shopping and we show them high, medium, and low sexualized items of clothing, bras, underwear, bathing suits, shorts, and ask them, how much do you want to wear this item of clothing? And then there are two other domains of questions, one about power. So how much do you feel that you can get influence over people, boys and adults, by being sexually attractive? So this emphasis on seeing sexuality as a way to exert power. And then a last domain that talks about compromise. So this has items that say things like, I get up an hour early before school so I have time to do my hair and makeup. Or even though I would like to spend my money on other things, I spend my money on makeup to try and look hot. So there's some element of I'm giving up something in order to be sexually appealing. So they fill out our questionnaire. Then at the end of the year, we get their grades and their talk scores. And in this first study, we found correlations between our scores on the internalized sexualization and their grades in school. And the higher scoring girls had lower rates of internalized sexualization. So it was the girls who wanted to wear the very high sandals, thong underwear, the very lacy, sexy bras, very, very short shorts, who were interested and their friends were interested in makeup and appearance and getting boyfriends, that scored the lowest on our indices of grades in every subject in their schools and on the standardized tests. So that suggests a link to us. Now, we still didn't understand why. Like, we don't know why those two things are playing out the way they do. But there, we had really two kinds of hypotheses. And one is that girls might start to do poorly in school and start to think to themselves, you know, I'm never going to be a brain, a scientist. I'm never going to be a brain surgeon. I better put my eggs in a different basket. So you could start with some initial school failure in middle school, and then start to say, I better look for another domain in which I'm going to excel. And therefore, these girls might over time quit trying so hard in academics where they're showing some initial failure and start trying harder in the makeup, appearance, looking hot, getting a boyfriend domain.
So maybe one possible explanation is that the disinclination away from academic pursuits may actually start first or precede.
Right.
Okay, the
internalized sexualization, the deciding sexuality is what's going to be important to me. But it could be the reverse. It could be that they come to see sexuality as really important, and that's going to cost them some time and effort, right? Everyone's time and money and resources are limited. And if you start to value that, the other domains are going to suffer. So we started out to do a second study where we were really interested in trying to look at that pathway. How does the one thing affect the other thing? And decided to find a task that was going to present the girls with this trade-off, with a chance to say, I can only do one of two things here. In this situation, I'm either going to concentrate and put my efforts into being competent, right, intellectually effective here, or good-looking, right, hot in this context. And we came up with using broadcast journalism. So we noticed there's some controversy over newscasters in the United States concerning their appearance. So newscasters used to be primarily male, and more women have moved into newscasting, anchoring, for example, the CBS News or the ABC News. And over time, they've become increasingly sexualized. So there's some articles about Fox News, and the female anchors are wearing very low-cut shirts with cleavage showing and very long hair and big dangly earrings. And so we thought maybe newscasting would be this interesting domain to study because it could kind of pull for either thing, being a very competent deliverer of the news versus a hot, sexy-looking deliverer of the news. So we recruited girls for a study of broadcast journalism. So they're recruited by being told that they're going to come into a study that's about ability in newscasting, and they'll come in and do a survey and actually make a little broadcast for us. So they come into the lab and they're put into a room where they're going to do the newscast. And it's a bare room with a table with makeup on it and a camera set up in there. And we say, you're going to go in and you're going to have 5 minutes to prepare. Then we're going to come in and turn on the camera and you're going to do the newscast. So they go into the room. The camera's already on, unbeknownst to them. And we're going to film what they do for those 5 minutes in the room. And we're especially interested in whether they are going to practice the script, which they get when they walk in, or put on makeup. So we just record them for 5 minutes. And then when they're all done, they're told the truth. So after they complete the newscast, we come in. The news class was meant to be kind of tricky. We put some big words in there, so there would be some need to practice if you were going to deliver it fluently. It was about a Smithsonian expedition to a foreign country to look at animal species. So they're told the truth afterwards. They said, this is about something else. We want to keep your video. The tape was on. We'd like you to fill out this survey on your attitudes about peer relations and media and appearance. And then, consent to be part of the study. And we just had a few girls who said no at that point. I think 7 or 8 mothers and kids said, no, give us the tape, delete it, and we don't want to be part of the study. The rest of them all agreed. Then they filled out the internalized sexualization scale, and now we can look to see whether their scores predict what they did in the room. And indeed, they did. So girls who score higher on the internalized sexualization scale spent more time putting on makeup, and they also spent less time reading the script than girls who scored low on the sexualization scale. And their scores, though, did not predict any of the neutral things they could have done in the room. So we checked whether they, stared into space or chewed gum or played on their phone, something that wasn't either preparing or dealing with sexual appearance.
And that also, I guess, kind of rules out coincidence that, that the girls who spent more time primping were just, having a bad day as a group.
Yeah, no, it looked to us that they were very specifically interested in makeup, too. There was some appearance things that we didn't code as sexualized, so if they looked in a mirror, we didn't count that, because we figured anybody might want to check whether you have food on your teeth before you do a newscast. So looking in the mirror didn't count. It was putting on makeup, the lipstick, the eyeshadow, the mascara, that counted as sexualized behavior.
Okay, now... and this just might be my own read. This study's findings are rather provocative, I would say, or at least provoking. And it's clear from your tone that that you think that it ought to just at a minimum spur deeper reflection on this phenomenon. If not some kind of action or advocacy. But to my mind, that makes it all the more important that that your findings be replicated in some fashion. So, I mean, do you have any plans on testing the replicability of what you found here?
Absolutely. So I mentioned we have a data set that we have not yet published, looking at girls and a whole bunch of other sexualized behaviors, such as shaving their legs and wearing makeup, how early these things start and why they're doing it. We're asking girls, why are you wearing makeup to sixth grade? But we also have a 3-year longitudinal study. So we followed kids in a private school for 3 years from sixth, seventh, eighth grade. To look if we could tell which is happening first, the sexualization or the academic trouble. And the pathways are suggesting they both happen, that there may be two pathways. Some girls seem to have trouble in school first, and that leads to the next year higher internalized sexualization scores. And in some girls, we see the opposite. We see the rise of sexualization first and then the declining academic achievement. Though that, again, could be that they've merely started to fail in school sooner than sixth grade, so we can't definitively say which happens first. But in general, we're replicating the results that internalized sexualization does not seem to facilitate high academic achievement, that it seems to be a risk factor for declining academic achievement if you see high sexualization scores in girls. But of course, we would like other labs to replicate. We would like more people to study this phenomenon.
Dr. Bigler, I hope we've done justice to the subject and to your study.
Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
And I don't know how appropriate this will be for your audience or newscast, but You know, one of the things that's concerning to me and people argue is part of what's happening here is that the whole culture has gotten in the U.S. really highly sexualized as a part of the accessibility of pornography. That when you analyze what is happening, many people argue really quite effectively, I think, that pornography has gotten so accessible. It's free, it's easy. Any kid can see porn right now on so many different things, on their phone, right, on computers. And these things have made their way into popular culture. Examples like thong underwear are really pervasive to me. Some of these things, the really high hooker sandals, thong underwear, come out of pornography and used to be in kind of an underworld. People who knew about them knew about that underworld. They are now just mainstream. And in fact, thong underwear are marketed to girls who are 9 years old. Right. So you and high heels are marketed to girls who are 9 years old and padded bras. And we've seen breast implants in kids under 18 skyrocket in the last 10 years, suggesting that this culture is going through this strong sexualization. And I really think we need more people to study it. And the problem in the U.S. is there's such a reluctance to ask kids about these issues. So, for example, in our own work, we have not been able to ask kids about sexual behaviors because of the, you know, ethical parental consent, a culture that is so reluctant to talk about sex, though so eager to show it, right? So this paradox of being in a real sexualized place without having the guts to talk about sex, especially with children, in an honest, ethical way. And so my actual frank worry is that we are seeing boys who are 10, 11, 12, 13 years old being exposed to quite a lot of porn and getting an image of female sexuality, which is very different from even 20 years ago, what boys would have seen. And girls as well, though, you know, who are going to get exposed either to pornography directly or to its effects in the culture, where you see women parading around naked or in thong underwear in a way that is very much aimed at the male gaze, not aimed out of any kind of healthy sexuality. And I really think we need more people to study what this is doing to kids' conceptions of themselves and their identity and their values, but also relationships between boys and girls, as well as gay and lesbian couples, who also are some degree affected by all of that.
Right, absolutely. Thanks so much, and thank you for extending the conversation. And I think our listeners will appreciate that very much, quite honestly.
Super. Thank you.